Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by C.W.B. and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 22. Na Tao, The Ages. Summary. Sherlock seeks answers, because that's what Sherlock does. Huddy is furious. Sherlock is sure that if the older penguin hadn't been raised in an era of genteel manners and all things civil, she'd be tearing Moringa apart, feather by feather. He watches her barely manage to contain her fury and adds two pieces of information to his ice palace. One, Huddy is a badass mother pang, and two, she needs to be bumped up on his list of, quote, allies to bring with you into a dark crevice, unquote. The junior pangs are huddled now, or something close to huddled. One by one, sometimes one by two, or two by three, they whisper pieces of the Moringa debacle to their carekeeper. Somehow she assimilates their random bits of data and strings them all together until she has the complete story. When it comes together in her mind, solid as a tail carved in ice, she appears to grow twice her size. She circles them, packing them in as tight as she can, muttering to herself the entire time, "Of all the feather-brained things I've ever heard, as if she would know Oni Oni if she saw it, dried up old, jealous of anyone else's affection, have half a mind to shake some sense into her, teach her a thing or two. After all the hard work, shouldn't have let her know in the first place, over my dead body." The pangs around Sherlock are foostering and fluttering and trying to get comfortable, but everyone is listening, and all of their heads move in synchronicity as she continues to circle, pressing and smoothing as she fusses over their sleep arrangements. Sherlock, always on the outside, has a prime position to hear her utterances every time she passes him. John, belly to belly with him, has craned his neck up and over Sherlock's shoulder so he can listen too. Sherlock tries not to be distracted by the full-body contact. She takes a step back now and cocks her head to one side, inspecting her work. "Janine, stop slouching. You're creating a gap between yourself and Lestra. And there we need to fatten you up a bit. You're too thin for anything but the middle of the huddle. Bless you, Stamford. You are a regular paying hotspot, you are. Irina, move closer to Stamford." She licks the tip of her wing and holds it up above her head. "The wind is dying down a bit, but it's low and moving counter moon. Shift with it, not against it, if you get cold." She's been saying the same things to them each and every night of the summer, ever since the rest of the colony left, when she was left in charge of their care and safety. She has taken this responsibility above and beyond any expectation anyone could have had. Sometimes Sherlock thinks she must believe they're all still hatchlings, but he sees how important it is to her, so he never disallows her the notion that they cannot survive a night without her. Who knows? Maybe they can't. They all watch as she stomps away to rejoin the elders, still irate at what the younger pangs have told her. Eight pairs of sleepy eyes track her every movement, half hoping for some sort of showdown between the two spinsters. When she reaches the older emperors, arranged in a discussion circle, she wedges herself between Erebus and Cetus, and with great agitation begins to whisper directly into Erebus's ear. Sherlock watches Erebus nod now and then, coming to the conclusion that there will be no spectacle forthcoming, he relaxes against John and closes his eyes. The next morning, he wakes earlier than the others. Stretching, blinking, he surveys the scene before him. Irina and Janine are snuggled together in the middle of the huddle, Anthea back to back with Janine and close to, but not touching, Stamfjord's side. Lestra is back to back with John and belly to belly with Malling. Interesting. He takes a careful step away from John while nudging Stamfjord and Lestra into his place, making sure that John resettles against them before he removes himself from the creche. If he wasn't fully awake before, the rush of cold air that surrounds him now does the job. Nearby, the senior council prepares for the day. Mycroft and Cetus have just emerged from the water after their morning ablutions and are drying themselves with their bills. Pavo and Vela are removing fish bones and shed feathers from the area, and Huddy and Erebus are moving through a series of slow exercises to loosen and elongate their backs, necks, and wings. Moringa is nowhere in sight. Sherlock considers his options and heads toward Cetus. As he approaches, Mycroft looks up and gives him a questioning look. Sherlock gestures toward the other pang, and Mycroft gives a small signal of acknowledgement, exchanges a quick word with Cetus, and waddles away. The healer finishes grooming with one last shake of his feathers and smiles at Sherlock.
"You're up early this morning, Sherlock."
"I have a lot on my mind, Elder Cetus. I found it difficult to sleep."
"Understandably so. What can I do to help alleviate your unease?"
"I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions."
"Of course, and hopefully I'll be able to answer them."
Sherlock looks over his shoulder to make sure no one else has wandered within earshot. Taking his cue, Cetus steps further down the shore, putting more distance between them and the rest of the senior council. Sherlock thinks back to the questions he asked at Mycroft's presentation, only 5 months ago, and yet most of his lifetime.
"Elder Cetus, I have learned that Aptenodytes forsteri do not reach reproductive maturity until approximately 3 winters of age. I suspect this is why Elder Erebus said that John and I could not have been engaged in Onioni, because it would be biologically impossible to reproduce."
Cetus nods, but remains silent.
"I only tell you this now because I know I will be asked later. John and I were not in the mating position, as it has been explained to me, so I am not overly worried about Elder Moringa's claims. Her sanity, perhaps, but not her claims."
Cetus fidgets, and Sherlock realizes that he's trying not to laugh.
"I do wonder, though, about what is happening inside my body to make me want to touch John all the time. And I want to know if it's going to get worse. I mean, not that it's bad, but I don't want to get John in trouble for what feels natural to me. And so, if it's going to get stronger, these physical feelings that I possess, I wonder if there's a method to, perhaps, lessen those feelings?"
Cetus takes a deep breath, humming in consideration when he exhales. His expression is a study in focused concentration.
"Sherlock, my dear Ping, I do wish all emperors were as straightforward and unabashed in their curiosity as you. It would save so many of them so much confusion and misunderstanding. Your feelings are natural. You are an adolescent now, changing rapidly from a chick to an adult. The changes in your outward appearance are mirrored by changes inside your body as well, and these developments are rather drastic at times. I have examined the bodies of many deceased penguins over the passing of many moons. Although very sad, some of these were the bodies of young chicks, and some were juveniles like yourself, and of course some were quite elderly."
Sherlock struggles to pay attention, even as dozens of new questions flood his mind with each and every word Cetus speaks. "Examine deceased pengs? Dissections, perhaps? Where? How? Can he watch?"
"Various differences based on age. The reproductive organs change over time, with the demands put upon them during different life stages. I am not entirely sure of the purpose of everything I have seen, and I suspect there exist many important processes that are invisible to the eye. For example, why is it all emperor's court, and then mate, at the same time each winter season? I am convinced that something inside the body is heightened, perhaps released into our blood or our brain, that causes these behaviors. But what? I do not know. I think, young Sherlock, when the call comes upon you, you will find yourself quite incapable of stopping it. Your body will direct your thoughts instead of the other way around."
Sherlock highly doubts this, given how hard he has worked to manage both his thoughts and his body, but he doesn't interrupt. Instead, he directs his frustration to his furrowed brow.
"Perhaps I have drifted in my explanations.
What I endeavor to tell you, Sherlock, is that there is a long behavioral and experiential continuum between chick and adult, between wanting only basic needs met and wanting the social and biological imperative of a mate and family. Your urges to connect with and touch one another are natural, and yes, they will become stronger over time. However, they will not lead you toward inappropriate action, not as long as your body remains unprepared. Does this mean, sir, that I will not find myself wanting to mate before my body is ready, or that I will want to mate before my body is ready, but the action will not be effective and therefore cannot be appropriate? And if the latter, why would some consider it improper? And if it is improper, surely there's a way to stop it? Sita smiles and pats Sherlock on the shoulder. You are insatiable in your quest for knowledge, aren't you? It seems important, Elder Cetus, given yesterday's histrionics. Again, Cetus appears to stifle a laugh. Yes, indeed, Sherlock. Exploration is natural. Enjoy yourself. It is not inappropriate or improper, but no, as far as I am aware, there is no way to dampen those feelings. I have in the past found certain marine components to reduce hunger during the long moons of incubation, and to revive airflow during a near drowning, but I have yet to find something to alter the emotions or outcomes of reproduction. Does that help? Sherlock checks off items on a mental list and nods. Yes, sir, that helps. I have only one other question, but I am not sure that anyone will have an answer. And what is that, if I may ask? If our feelings are natural and our actions were not inappropriate, deductive reasoning leads me to conclude that Moringa took offense only in that we are both males. Why would that be wrong? Cetus offers Sherlock a weak smile and shakes his head. That, my son, is one for the ages. Behind them, Erebus calls the morning hui to order. Sherlock and Cetus make their way back. Notes. Maori translations. Na tau. Noun. Ages, season, period of time, interval, time of year. Hui. Conference, meeting.